destroyer and several transports. On the following day, the Germans attacked again, but the line held, thanks to coordinated action by Allied ground and naval forces and strong support from the air. Over a 24-hour period, Allied tactical and strategic aircraft flew nearly 2,000 sorties over the battle zone, dropping some 1,400 tons of bombs. By the 15th, the crisis had largely passed. Allied reinforcements continued to pour ashore, and the beachhead was steadily strengthened and pushed out. On the 16th, German resistance in the American sector slackened significantly, and advance units of Clark's 5th Army met up with forward reconnaissance patrols from Montgomery's 8th, which had been pushing steadily northwards against determined German rearguards. North and west of Salerno, the British component of 5th Army still faced strong resistance and occasional counterattacks, but it soon became obvious that these were mainly rearguard actions and that the Germans were in the process of a phased withdrawal to the north. The arrival of 8th Army brought the Battle of Salerno to an end and created a broad front across the Apennine spine of Italy. But the Allies had achieved far less than they had hoped. The landings had failed to exploit the opportunity provided by Italy's capitulation, and those in the Gulf of Salerno had almost met with disaster. In addition to the damage wrought on the invasion fleet, the Allies had suffered twice as many casualties as their outnumbered opponents. Indeed, Salerno had been a much tougher test for the Allies than the invasion of Sicily, and signalled German determination to hold on to Italy for as long as possible. From Salerno, the Allies made only slow progress, entering Naples on October the 1st, more than 2 weeks behind schedule. They found the city in ruins and the port unusable. What had not been damaged by Allied bombing had been systematically demolished by the Germans prior to their evacuation. On the Adriatic coast, the British 8th Army was also meeting stiff resistance. In early October, assault units crossed the Biferno River, but the intensity of the fighting brought the advance to a halt along the line of the River Trigno. During November, the Germans continued to pull back in stages, trading ground for time and inflicting heavy casualties on the pursuing Allies. The various dislocations and delays to the Allied timetable were now being felt by the troops on the ground. The Italian winter was setting in, and heavy rain was swelling the numerous streams and rivers, most of which ran directly across the Allied line of advance. Minor roads were often either flooded or churned to mud by the passage of so many tanks and heavy vehicles. Congestion of the few remaining major routes badly affected the movement of supplies and reinforcements. Closer to the front, the roads and main approaches were sown with mines and were often covered by enemy artillery. For the infantry, the weather brought misery, and the frustration of fighting in difficult and mountainous terrain against a skillfully retreating enemy drained morale. Compared to casualties from wounds, Allied soldiers actually suffered more heavily from sickness, including trench foot, an affliction not seen since the First World War. Italy was a campaign in which infantry and artillery played an inordinately important role. The terrain and conditions were simply unsuitable for tanks, and they were used only occasionally, mainly in a support role. Offensives were carried by mass gunfire and by infantry, attacking over rough ground or through rubble-filled streets. During November and early December, the Allied infantry fought a series of such actions, evicting the Germans, sometimes at bayonet point, from their mountain redoubts and strongholds. On the Adriatic coast, 8th Army pushed across the River Trigno, and then the Sangro. West of the Apennines, 5th Army was inching its way into the mountains overlooking the plain of Naples. But in December, both forces were beginning to come up against the forward defences of the Gustave Line, the last and by far the most formidable of the German defensive lines south of Rome. The Gustave Line ran from Ortona on the Adriatic coast along high ground dominating the valley of the River Sangro, and then through the Apennine Mountains to Minturno, at the mouth of the Garigliano. The line was heavily fortified and hinged on the forbidding fortress abbey of Monte Cassino. The abbey commanded the entrance to the Liri Valley, the only major route through the mountains to Rome. The northern end of the Gustave Line was held by the 76th Panzer Corps, which consisted of four divisions. The southern end, including Monte Cassino, was held by the 14th Panzer Corps, which also consisted of four divisions. But it was in this sector that Kesselring expected the main Allied offensive to be launched. Here, he concentrated the bulk of his reserves, a further four divisions, to prevent any Allied breakthrough into the Liri Valley. Facing the 76th Corps, 8th Army had five divisions, but the line of advance was not promising, and 8th Army operations were to be scaled down in favour of the main effort, which would be mounted by Clark's 5th Army. For the assault on the Gustave Line, Clark deployed two British divisions, three American divisions, and two French divisions. He also secured the transfer of two divisions from 8th Army to his own. The 5th Division was slotted into the line on the left of the 56th, and the 2nd New Zealand was placed with the 45th Division in tactical reserve. Thus, massively reinforced, 5th Army would attack across the Garigliano River and its northern tributary, the Rapido, aiming to break into the Liri Valley and collapse the German defences south of Rome. The offensive was launched on January the 17th, but despite some small gains in the coastal sector by the British 5th and 56th Divisions, the main attack across the Rapido by the American 36th Division met much stiffer resistance. On the 21st, instead of reinforcing and exploiting the British bridgehead, Clark insisted priority be given to the American effort and ordered the 36th Division to renew its assault across the Rapido. While the Americans pressed their offensive against the Gustave Line, a force of two divisions, one British and one American, was embarking for the town of Anzio, 60 miles further up the coast, and only 30 miles from Rome. The landings at Anzio were intended to cut the lines of communication to the Gustav Line and prevent the Germans from conducting an orderly retreat. The troops went ashore on the 22nd, completely unopposed. German reserves had been called south to combat Fifth Army's offensive, and there were virtually no German units for miles. Despite this, Clark instructed the commander of 6th Corps at Anzio to secure a strong beachhead before pushing inland, with the result that the element of surprise was lost, and the opportunity to win a significant victory in Italy was squandered. In January 1944, the Allies had achieved only a precarious lodgment, nowhere more than 10 miles deep, and centered on the main road leading from Anzio to Rome. The original two assault divisions of 6th Corps, however, were being rapidly reinforced by a further three, one of them armored, and despite the depredations of the Luftwaffe, the invasion fleet still possessed more than 20 major warships. Kesselring, by this time, had four divisions deployed in a defensive cordon, and four more assembling for an attack. On February the 7th, these were launched against a vulnerable salient created by the Allied thrust northwards. After heavy fighting, the Allies were driven back. But pausing briefly to reorganize, the Germans attacked again, driving straight down the road towards Anzio. On the first day, the Germans made good progress, punching a breach in the Allied lines 2 miles wide and a mile deep. The second day saw more modest gains as the Allies recovered and responded with local counterattacks supported by concentrated artillery and naval gunfire. The Germans pressed their offensive for a third day, but every fresh thrust was met by a deluge of shellfire and by determined fighting from the infantry. The line held, and on the fourth day, the Allies counterattacked vigorously, recovering some of the ground they had lost. But both sides were now exhausted, and both, in different ways, had suffered defeat. Although Kesselring's offensive had failed in its primary objective of driving the Allies back into the sea, it had badly shaken them and forced them back to inferior positions. More ominously, the Germans were now deploying for defense and seemed more than capable of containing the Allied beachhead indefinitely. With the failure of the 6th Corps to make progress at Anzio, it was clear that the Gustav Line would have to be taken by frontal assault. The Abbey of Monte Cassino, although unoccupied, was regarded by many Allied commanders as the single most formidable position in the entire line. The plan for the Second Battle of Cassino called for the destruction of the abbey by a massive air bombardment and for the subsequent capture of the hill and of the town below it. The destruction of the abbey, however, proved to be a military blunder of the first magnitude. The operation had been hastily mounted, and no attempt had been made to coordinate the airstrike with the ground offensive. Predictably, the ruins were quickly occupied by the Germans, providing them with an almost unassailable position. When the attack on the abbey was finally launched, 2 days later, by the 4th Indian Division, it was repulsed with heavy casualties. The attack on the town was equally unsuccessful. After a difficult assault crossing of the Lower Rapido, two companies of the 2nd New Zealand Division fought their way through the edge of the town to the railway station. But there, they were soon counter-attacked by German panzergrenadiers. The fighting in the town lasted for only 1 day. The outnumbered New Zealanders lacked heavy weapons, and the failure of the Indian Division to take the abbey and the commanding heights rendered their position untenable, forcing them to withdraw. Although the Second Battle of Casino had been a costly failure, plans and preparations were already being made for a third. Once again, this was preceded by a massive airstrike, this time obliterating what remained of the town. The bombardment lasted for 4 hours, yet remarkably, failed in its main aim of dislodging the defenders. In one of the most savage engagements of World War II, the infantry of the 2nd New Zealand Division and units of the German 1st Parachute Division duelled at close quarters, contesting every mound and crater. Although many of their comrades had been killed and almost all their heavy weapons destroyed in the bombardment, the parachutists rallied brilliantly, fending off with mortars, machine guns and rifles every attempt by the New Zealanders to clear them out of the town. By the fifth day, they had effectively regained the initiative and had established a strong position west of the railway station. Mounting casualties, exhaustion, and growing frustration eventually brought the battle to a halt. But the fighting among the ruins was to continue sporadically for weeks, as both sides attempted to consolidate or expand their positions. The failure of the Third Battle of Casino finally convinced General Alexander that only a full-scale offensive against the Gustav Line could hope to succeed, and that General Clark was not the man to command the main attack. Accordingly, he stripped 5th Army of its British and Commonwealth divisions and extended 8th Army's sphere of operations to include the casino sector and the entrance to the Leary Valley. The attack would be launched on a broad front, spearheaded by 9 divisions of 8th Army and supported on the left by 4 French and 2 American divisions. Clark still retained operational responsibility for the 6th Corps at Anzio, which was reinforced by a further American division. 6th Corps was ordered to break out to the north when the main offensive was underway and cut off the German line of retreat. This was essentially the task for which 6th Corps had originally been put ashore 4 months earlier. The offensive opened on May the 11th, with a sustained artillery barrage by more than 2,000 guns. While 4 British divisions attacked across the Rapido into the Leary Valley, a Polish corps of 2 divisions attacked the Monte Cassino stronghold. The Poles were recent additions to 8th Army's frontline strength, and as well as being fresh, they were utterly fanatical and driven by an intense patriotism and hatred for the Germans. The Poles launched 2 offensives. The first made steady progress initially, but petered out in the face of bitter German resistance and fierce counterattacks. The second, mounted some days later, gained a key ridge west of the abbey, threatening it with encirclement. Polish casualties by this time were frighteningly high, but the Poles were undeterred, either by their own losses or the ferocious fire that was directed at them from the abbey and adjacent heights. That night, the Germans began withdrawing, and on the following day, the Poles raised a regimental pennant above the ruins of the abbey, bringing to an end the fourth and last Battle of Cassino. While the Polish Corps was fighting at Cassino, the British in the Liri Valley and the Americans on the extreme left wing were making only slow progress. The British attack, although strongly supported by artillery, faced the same problems that had defeated the Americans in January, in particular, very heavy and accurate defensive fire. In the coastal sector, the American 2nd Corps, consisting of two fresh divisions, launched its attack out of the Garigliano bridgehead. But this sector of the front had been static for months, and the German defenses were well organized. In the first few days of the battle, the Americans suffered heavy casualties, achieving only minor penetrations. In the mountains to the north, however, the French were making remarkable gains. On May the 13th, they had broken through surprisingly weak German defences and were soon rapidly pressing forward through terrain previously considered by the Germans to be virtually impassable. The French breakthrough and the capture of Monte Cassino by the Poles opened the way for the Americans and British, respectively. The Americans resumed their advance cautiously, but encountered only light rear guards. The Germans facing them, isolated and in danger of being cut off by the French, had quietly disengaged and were now in full retreat to the northwest. In the Liri Valley, the defense was more resolute, but the Gustave Line was no longer tenable, and the Germans everywhere were conducting a fighting retreat. By May the 22nd, the Gustave Line had crumbled completely, and a further fallback position had been breached. On the following day, 6th Corps launched its long-awaited breakout from Anzio. The German line of containment had been thinned out to provide troops for the Gustav Line, and there were no tactical reserves. Moreover, the blow fell on the weakest sector of the front. In 2 days of remorseless fighting, the Americans opened a huge breach in the defenses, capturing Cisterna on the 25th, and linking up with units of the American 2nd Corps advancing along the coast. The bulk of the German 10th Army at this time was still well to the east, and a push north by 6th Corps, with support from 2nd Corps, would almost certainly have cut the main German line of retreat. But this was rejected by Clark, who ordered 6th Corps to turn west and head directly for Rome. The maneuver took almost a day to complete, and when 6th Corps resumed its offensive, it soon ran into difficulties. The approaches to Rome were strongly held by German panzer grenadiers and parachutists, and the front was heavily fortified. The attack stalled, and the offensive broke down. On 8th Army's front, the German 10th Army was now rapidly disengaging and retreating through the Liri Valley towards Rome. Against 6th Corps, the remnants of the German 14th Army held the line until the end of May, when it too began falling back. During the first 3 days of June, the Germans completed their withdrawal, extricating successfully the bulk of their forces in southern Italy and surrendering Rome and the Tiber bridges intact to the Allies. The first American units reached the Italian capital on June the 4th. Ironically, not from Anzio, but from the Liri Valley. Yet the capture of Rome, although a great prize, had been marred by the failure of the Allies to coordinate their efforts and inflict a crushing defeat on the German forces in southern Italy. Both Clark and Alexander were at fault. Clark for his willful disobedience of orders and for his determination to see Rome liberated by the Americans. Alexander for his lack of forcefulness and resolution, and for allowing the campaign to degenerate into a race in which the only real winners could be the Germans. In the event, Clark's moment of glory was to be short-lived. On June the 6th, the Allies landed in Normandy, shifting the focus of Allied efforts from Italy to France, and relegating the Italian campaign to one of only marginal significance. In Italy, the fighting was to continue for a further year. From Rome, the Germans fell back to the northern Apennines, where they conducted a bitter and protracted defense through the winter and spring of 1945, before finally surrendering only a few days before the end of the war.